Thanks for downloading this podcast. It's for personal use only and must not be broadcast, reproduced, or used in any form without permission.
Tell your friends they can get their own copy wherever they get their podcasts. The sound of endurance racing
around the world.
This is RS1, part of the Radio Show Limited Network.
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of On The Gritty. Thank you so much for joining us. Great to have you on board. Big show coming your way in just a tick. First of all, we're going to have a chat to young gun Tom Sargent. He had a fantastic weekend in his Porsche up at Sydney Motorsport Park on the weekend, reigning Formula Ford champion and also Bathurst 6-hour winner. We'll also have a chat to Josh Buchan, who had a win in the TCR cars on the weekend Sydney Motorsport Park. More importantly, the first night race on Saturday for TCR. As we say good day to Richard Crowell, as we always do off the top of the program from theracetalk.com. Hello, Crowellsy.
Mr. Shebeki, nice to be with you. Big weekend at Sydney Motorsport Park for the Shannons Nationals or Championships and Speed Series. Really enjoyable. We'll debrief all of that a bit later on. Looking forward to it. But there were some drivers who made a mark, Shebeks. I'm giving you a nice segue here to introduce our first guest, because in Porsche, Michelin, Sprint Challenge especially, there was some unbelievably good racing.
There certainly was. And today we're going to sort of dub, I suppose, the first part of our program, our young guns. We've got a couple of really good young up-and-coming drivers to have a chat to us. And first of all, we'll have a chat to a man who won the Formula Ford Championship last year in 2021. And gee whiz, I tell you what, it's been a great 12 months for him. Not only did he win that, also had a win of the Bathurst 6-hour. Some fantastic driving over the weekend, as you said, in the Porsche Michelin Sprint Challenge. Thomas Sargent's his name, and he joins us on the line now. G'day, Tom.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Oh, we're fantastic, mate. Thank you for joining us. First of all, we catch you up in Brisbane, or it was at QR yesterday. I think you might have been at DJI headquarters today. We have spent a couple of days with the team doing a bit of testing and just doing a bit of learning. How's that all going for you?
Oh, that was an incredible couple of days up here. The Team DJI have been nothing more than nice to me and inviting. So it's been awesome to be up here and kind of see how they run and get, you know, get in and amongst the team and how a professional race team works. It's been an awesome opportunity.
So you're out at QR, mate. Tell us what went on out there and how the day was.
I actually spent almost 2 days out there. I spent Monday out there and most of today. So it was very good. Monday we had a fair few laps, which was awesome. Weather was a bit troubling there for a little bit with a little bit of rain, but it mostly held off, so it was pretty good. But we had a couple of young people like myself out there testing the Shell V-Power Mustang. So got to turn a few laps and got to get involved with the team on how they go about it, talk to the engineers and their current drivers at the moment to try and improve on myself out there.
And what was that experience jumping into a supercar like, mate?
I think I'm definitely very spoilt with my first ever supercar experience being in a Shelby Power Mustang. So it was an awesome experience. The cars are very well built. You can see why they do the times they do now. They behave really well, and everything about it was awesome. The car was, for my brief few laps, was definitely felt to be set up quite well, and everything about it was just really nice and well built. So it was an awesome experience. Definitely, like I said, very spoiled.
Of course, this was a part of the prize that Tom won last year at Crowley as part of his Formula Ford Championship here in Australia. And we do congratulate and thank DJR for allowing us to do this. And we'll be doing it again this year with the Formula Ford winner. Mate, in regards to jumping into the car, I mean, of course, you're driving a Porsche on the weekend. You've been driving a few different things this year. Was it an easy car to step into and just basically grab a hold of straight away?
Interesting enough, I kind of leaned toward that a little bit. It was very, definitely after spending 3 days in the Porsche on the weekend, you definitely, at least you're up to speed when you get into a car that's very, very similar speed. So it did make that transition a little bit easier, I think. That, you know, the overall principles on how to drive and were very similar, but now the supercar's definitely got a few different traits to the Porsche. Like, it's definitely got a lot more feeling in the front end, a lot more turn being front engine, It doesn't put power down as well as the Porsche due to a little of rear tyre, but overall it was an awesome car, and it definitely was not as big of a transition as I thought, but that might have been, yeah, helped by my 3 days I did in the Porsche the day before. So
Alex Davison, Will Davison, Tony D'Alberto and Anton De Pasquale were all there driving as well. You mentioned the word speed. Give us the word, mate. How did you go up against those guys when it came to times?
Yeah, like you mentioned, they were all there. They didn't end up cutting laps yesterday. They cancelled their official test due to the weather. So Anton jumped in for a couple of laps before me and turned a tire, turned a few laps. So I ended up, I think it was just over a second off him in the end there. Granted, he only did 3 or 4 laps, but yeah, I was pretty pleased with that in the end on how we went.
Yeah, that's not bad. Like, Anton's pretty experienced now and a proven race winner. So, yeah, really impressive stuff, mate. That's awesome. Must be a cool experience. I want to work through the year so far and build up to last weekend, because there's a bit to unpick there. But we haven't spoken to you on air since the Bathurst 6 Hour, and that was a remarkable weekend for yourself and Cameron. We had Cam on the show with his heroic final stint, but you got lumped with the task, mate, of starting the car from 472nd position right at the back next to the Mount Panorama Resort. What's your recall of that opening stint of that race as you carved your way through that field?
It was definitely an experience and a half. I remember turning up to the weekend, and I'd done 2 6 hours before in an 86, and I started one of those events, and I remember the start. I never saw the start. Like, I was still up at the chase when it happened, and I was like, you know, this is the year I'm actually going to see the start. Mm. And bugger me, I never saw it still. But that's all right. Maybe one day I'll get to see the start. But no, it definitely made for a very cool fairy tale, the race. So that first stint was, you know, as much as there was a lot of people out there, a lot of people to pass, everyone was very good about it. They kind of, you know, when you flashed them, they were very careful that you were around there and trying to move forward. So everyone was, you know, gave you their space. There was a couple of times there where people didn't see you, so you had to be, you know, a little bit careful and have a little bit reserved there. So it was good. I really enjoyed it. There wasn't too much pressure, because I kind of knew come the first safety car, we would catch back up to the field. So there wasn't any need to do anything kind of silly and outlandish there. So I just picked away at it and just kept making passes where I could. And yeah, it was very hard to overtake up the top. So yeah, I utilized the BMW straight line speed really there and tried to get them all in the straights in the braking area. But ultimately, my first stint was definitely a very good experience and something I'm going to remember for a long time.
Most people will tell you the better you prepare for something, the better you go. Preparation is key. In this case, though, preparation was nil, effectively, wasn't it? You got the car last minute. Even the overtaking move was basically on the last few laps. Everything was just so last minute, to the extent that it probably nearly didn't happen for you guys.
Yeah, you're 100% right there. We had the car for, I think it was only 10 months before the event, and because we were the first to build an M2, we were pioneering the way. So we had to make all the rules, I suppose you could say, for it, get the recognition documents done. So it took us a little bit longer than what it would take to do it now. So we had to design the roll cage and do all that. So everything was very last minute. And like I said, a week before the event, the thing wouldn't start. So we overhauled it up to Beric Linton's place in the Gold Coast here, and he spent 2 days on it. He fitted the steering wheel to it because it didn't have a steering wheel. He got it running and took us to a place where we could at least give it a wheel arm and make sure all the wheels are pointing in the same direction. So, huge thanks to Beric. You know, without him, we weren't going to be there. But, even at the track on Thursday night, we were still prepping the car, finishing the fuel tank. So it was very last minute, and it would have been nice to have a little bit more testing beforehand, but that's just the way it worked out. And like you said, the whole meeting was a little bit last minute for us. I do think if we had a little bit more time, we probably would have been a bit more on top of the issue we had with obviously the ride height and qualifying. But those things happen, and we're definitely glad it happened on Saturday, not Sunday.
And just tell us about that experience of standing on top of the Bathurst podium for an outright win, because you were a class winner there in the the Toyota the year before, but so early in your career to lift the big trophy and stand on top of that very famous podium at Mount Panorama, hopefully not for the last time in your career.
Yeah, it was very, very special. Ever since I was a kid, you've watched Bathurst and you've watched him stand up on that podium there and you think, wow, that's pretty cool. That's something you want to achieve. And to be able to do that, like you said, I did it once, but to be able to get up there and actually spray the champagne this time and, you know, look around at the people that were standing next to me, you know, Tim Slade and Nick Kirk, I'd obviously been a supercar driver standing next to me on the podium, and Cameron, was very surreal and cool experience to be up there and to be the youngest ever outright winner at Bathurst 6 hours.
And Krause, he could have had a win on the weekend in Porsche Michelin Sprint, but gee whiz, that last turn.
Oh, wow. Well, second for the round, which is not a bad thing because the Sprint Challenge this year is Carrera Cup light. It is properly intense and competitive. But yeah, you had a really strong weekend, Tom. You had your pockets picked a little bit there in that second race on Saturday by young Ryan Wood, the young Kiwi who's very fast, and it all shapes up for you two to have an amazing title battle this year. But Sunday was great, obviously, you got a win, but Saturday, oh so close there, right at the very end.
Yeah, Saturday didn't quite go to plan for me in race two there. Obviously, race one couldn't quite match Ryan. He was super, super quick in race one, so he came back, tuned me up, actually. Car was good, just needed to change my driving a little bit, and I had found a lot more speed there in race two to kind of battle with him. So, he probably still has the edge on me there in race two a little bit, but, obviously led the whole race, and then last lap, last corner, got the lap traffic and ducked when I should have weaved sort of thing. So, in hindsight, definitely could have done that better, but it's just one of those things I learned from that, and, it definitely does hurt, obviously, because it did, ultimately cost a round win, but P2 was for the round, is still awesome, and I definitely come back out with a lot more fight on Sunday, and I think that was proven when I took the win in the final race on Sunday.
Yeah, definitely. Did you stay flat when you took to the grass to avoid Nathan Murray, who was in front of you, or was there a bit of a lift there?
No, I definitely was flat when I entered the grass, and then I kind of almost sprayed it, and I was like, no, this is not worth it. I'll roll out of this and pull back on. So for a minute there, I was trying to be the hero on the grass, but no, I definitely thought better of that very quickly.
Yeah, second's much better than the grandstand.
Yeah, that's where it was heading to, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was, yes.
Hey, Thomas, just before we let you go too, we should mention that you're still very much a part of Formula Ford with the work that you do with Cameron Hill, CHE, and a part of working with the young kids, and young James Fizik. Could be a good steerer as well.
No, I'm very, very fortunate to be able to be so heavily involved with the team at the moment and helping these younger drivers come through. So, obviously, I did it last year, so it's still relatively fresh for me, and it's all the same. So, it's awesome to be able to help those guys out where I can and give them, the little tips and tricks I learned along the way to help them. So, we've got four awesome young drivers in the team, three competing in nationals. So, James obviously did really well on last weekend, and he's very quick. He's still extremely young. Even makes me look old, I think. But he'll do really well. And I think this that incentive from DJR with this test day as well has been really awesome for that category. I know talking to our drivers, they're super keen about that as well. They're something that they're definitely pushing hard to get. But it'll be definitely going to be very tight this year. We've got an awesome bunch of young Formula Ford guys, and I'm awesome to be able to help out in the category as well. The category means so much to me, and I'm a really big believer that it's an awesome junior development category to go in and help you forge your path in motorsport.
And the great thing for James Crosley is it's Thomas's car from last year, so we know it's a good car.
Got pedigree, exactly. In the same way he's jumped into the Carrera Cup winner from last year, so no, very good. Mate, well done. Loved seeing your race on the weekend. I think Sprint Challenge this year is going to be an awesome battle. Yourself and Ryan and Courtney Prince, another Formula Ford graduate, was fast by the end of the weekend as well. So it's shaping up to be a really good fight and can't wait to follow your progress this season.
No, I'm very much looking forward to it. It's good to be racing some really top-level guys. And, hopefully tomorrow's day at Phillip Island goes well and we can hopefully get a bit of an edge over them at Phillip Island.
Good on you, Thomas. Thanks for your time, mate. Really appreciate it.
Thank you guys for having me. Awesome. Thank you.
All right, Krause, keeping with our young gun theme, geez, I tell you what, this guy did pretty well on Saturday night, winning the first ever TCM race at Under Lights, which was fantastic.
TCR even. TCR, yeah, you're right.
Did I say TCM?
Sorry, TCR. TCM. TCM were Under Lights. They were spectacular too, Shebex. But, gee, she's a competitive old championship Super Cheap Auto TCR this year, and our next guest is right at the very front of the battle and looking forward to a chat. Tony, when you introduce him.
Josh Buchan joins us for that chat. G'day, Josh. How are you?
Hello, gents. I'm very good, thank you. Thank you for having me on this lovely chat.
No, we appreciate it, mate. Thank you for joining us. Take us through the experience of not only one, driving Under Lights at Sydney Motorsport Park, but two, winning a race.
Yeah, that was good. Driving at any time and winning always makes whatever the conditions are feel much nicer than what they were. So for it being a little bit cold and chilly in Sydney that night, winning and throwing a bit of champagne over the suit and ruining it for the next day was well worth it. So, yeah, it was fantastic. You know, it was a good day, probably my strongest day in TCR, to be fair, with a pole and a win. So, yeah, great day in sport.
Really good day in sport. Mate, TCR is properly competitive this year. There's 100 points covering 11 drivers in the championship.
Crazy.
So, you know, you could go from leading the thing to being P6 in one weekend. You're right in the mix. You're in the top three in the championship. So just sum up the series for us so far for you and how competitive you're finding it behind the wheel of your HMO Customer Racing i30.
Yeah, it's outrageous at the moment. It really is. I mean, I led the championship out of round one, and then at the end of round two, I was in 11th. So that kind of sums it up. It's amazing. It's full of just absolute killers up and down the grid. It really is. There's really no one who doesn't belong there. And there are some, you know, properly good operators, both who were sort of undiscovered talents and who were already existing talents. And it's great because, you know, now we're a couple of years in, and particularly 2 years back to back, there's a lot of people on the grid. We all know how most of us drive now. We all sort of have a good respect for each other, most of us. and it's becoming, you know, a real tight-knit category, along with the fact that when you put the helmet on, you know that you're going to have to work for your money. So it makes it exciting. I honestly, when I say it before every weekend, I know you hear it a million times. That's the cliche. I have no idea what's going to happen each weekend. I figured going to Sydney we'd do well, but I figured that at Phillip Island and we got pumped. So, yeah, the narrative is always a fresh one each weekend in TCR.
We were talking to Thomas Sargent just before, and momentum seems to be the thing with him, having won, of course, the Formula Ford Championship last year, winning at Bathurst 12-hour, had a fantastic weekend with a win at Sydney Motorsport Park on the weekend. How important is momentum in your game?
I think momentum in TCR is tough. It's easy to get a roll on a weekend, but it's so easy to fall off it too. One sort of bad result can, you know, really turn that around. So it's just a case of consolidating every race and treating it like a whole new event. It really is. I mean, my first race over the weekend was a win. My second race was a 12th. And I kind of knew going into that, it was going to be tough just based on our tyre strategy. So, you know, to back it up with second coming from a few spots back in race three, it's fair to say I might not have had momentum for that third race. So, yeah, it's a challenge. But look, when you do get a couple of results in a row or a couple of good rounds, you can really feel a boost with the whole team. And I guess they're the ones who feel it the most, the team, the guys on the tools. Once you start going well, they lift. And when they lift, the environment when you come back into the lane is exceptionally different when you're going well. So it's probably where I notice it the most, if I'm being honest.
Mm. And momentum's one thing, but consistency is another. And it seems like that's something very difficult to find, especially when you've got to deal with things like a reverse top 10 race. But you look at the standings, the only two guys in front of you in the championship at the moment, D'Alberto and O'Keefe, haven't won a race. So we're four rounds in and they're winless, but they just keep accumulating thirds, fourths, fifths. So how do you engineer that consistency in while you're still trying to go out and extract the kind of performance you need to race at the front of such a competitive field?
Yeah, well, as you mentioned, Tony's been just welded to fifth, hasn't he? I mean, he's allergic to winning at the moment.
And he hates that too, by the way.
I know, and I remind him every time I see him. We're great mates, so I can say that. But, Tony has just stayed out of trouble. I mean, that third race in Sydney, I think he ran 16th or something, 17th. And his wheel was about, his tyre was about to fall off the rim, and he still got it to the finish line. That's the sort of stuff that will win you a series. Whereas, we had one bad round based off a strategy error that we made, and we just bled points. If it wasn't for that Phillip Island round, I'd be in a position much off into the distance. But I think at the end of the year, everyone's going to have a story, maybe two. So, without wanting my competitors to blow up on the grid before every race, which I'd take, I'm sure there are going to be a lot more twists and turns through the year, not just what we've seen so far. And we'll need a bit more paper in the scrapbook for the highlights, I'm sure.
You're right, mate. Everyone does have a story, and yours is quite interesting. The fact that you didn't start motor racing until you were quite late, at 16 years of age. Most kids get in at 8 or 9 in the go-karts. You were 16. Why the late start, and why motorsport at that age?
The late start was dollars and cents. And why motorsport? Well, I mean, my dad used to rally back in his younger days. Nothing outrageous, but drove some cool cars, and he was a car nut. When I was younger, he sold cars. Really cool sort of Japanese imports in the early 2000s, and Holden's at the peak of the SCAFE era, if you like. So that sort of VT, VX, and then sort of Japanese imports of Skyline, Supras in those days, that was my introduction to cars. And they were fast back then, and my dad had no issue in breaking road rules, and I had a lovely time, and I just enjoyed going fast. So what it was I just at one stage wanted to do it for myself, and that was, to go and get a go-kart. So I saved up for quite a while to do that. And once I did, I realized, I came pretty quick. And the racing thing was just go and compete against other guys to show them I was better than them. I didn't really care for racing. I just wanted to show other people I was fast. And that's all I ever wanted from it, was just to be sort of acknowledged to someone fast. And if you had another hour and a half, I'd explain how I got to where I am now. But that's kind of the premise of it, was just the love of driving. And it still is. I still love driving. I don't really care what it is, wheelbarrows, F1 cars, anything in between.
What's the goal? What's the direction you want to go? I mean, is TCR it? Are you happy here? Or do you have sights set on supercars? Or do you have sights set overseas?
It's a very good question. And it is a tough one as well. I mean, as I mentioned before, it's a dollars and cents thing as well. I am very happy where I am. I'm on an excellent deal, in a great environment with a fantastic group, between Hyundai, HMO, which is, effectively Barry Morcombe, and, Rob Benson running the show. I love where I am, and I'll stay there for as long as they'll have me. I'd love to do a bit of stuff in GT, some endurance stuff, and just bits and pieces here and there where I can. I'd never say no to driving a supercar, but I think it's quite unrealistic based off, at the moment, the investment that you need to make over a several year period in Super 2, Super 3 to even get a look in.
Sure.
Particularly when I'm at a category where I think, it's being treated as not a rival, but a sort of top level category as well. So if I can establish myself even more in TCR and, keep plugging away there, if there are opportunities overseas to do something in the category, I'd love to do that and just test myself against the guys who are considered the best, because I think our talent pool out here, although it might be a bit smaller, is certainly not any less competitive or filled with as much, any less quality, I should say.
For sure.
And you're a bit of an open wheeler man too, aren't you? You spent a couple of years in Formula 4 Formula 3.
Yeah, that's right. So my break in cars was through Listec Race Cars, Paul Liston, in Wetherill Park, which is actually where I'm driving through right now, in the passenger seat, of course. I was doing karting and kind of didn't really have much of a direction. And then a guy in a team we were racing with just basically said, oh, here's a number, give Paul a ring, you know, he'll give you a run in his car. And I just thought, no, he won't. Like, that doesn't exist. Like, Formula Ford's 60 grand a year, a test day's a couple of grand a year, and a test day's a few thousand dollars. So I thought, that's rubbish, I'm not going to do that. And I remember, how funny is this, I remember having my phone in my hand in front of me with Paul's number, and I was looking at it, and I thought, I'm not going to bother ringing it. And then I just, something told me, just push the number. So I rang the number, and sure enough, I did a test, and then I spent probably 3 years or so, 2 or 3 years racing their cars, and I still do stuff in their cars now. I mean, I drive all their sort of resto projects, old Lotus Formula Fords, and nice. You know, Formula 5000s, and you know, they've got some Formula 3000s that they're doing. Mm. And then the Formula 3 thing was similar. I was at a wedding and met Errol Gilmore, the late Errol Gilmore, and that was in January, and all of a sudden at February we're at Winton. So it's been very, very surreal.
Jesus, every chance we could see you at Winton later in the year for the Formula Festival. Festival of all
there
the
is
Formula
a chance,
cars.
Yes.
It's going to be fantastic.
There is a chance. I might be there in an old Matic 5000, John Goster 76 Australian Grand Prix car. So, yeah, I know, mate. I'm telling you, I've been held off. I've been held off by COVID twice for that car. So, potentially this will be it. So maybe.
Well, there's a couple of things to take out of that. One, I did speak. I know the late Errol Gilmore, who was a great human being from 2004 when Chris was first in Formula 3, and he had raps on you. Yep. And if you get raps from Errol Gilmore, that's a massive tick, because he called a spade, and he was a lovely, lovely bloke, and sorely missed. And two, I think we need to see you as part of the new Netflix series Drive for P25, starring young Will Liston, which was coined at the supercar round when he rolled out in the Formula 4 last year. And poor old Will, every time he said the camera cut to him, and they did give him an onboard, he was fired off the road. But outside of that, he was brilliant. But no, the Listons are a great family, great racing family. So that's a cool background to have. Hey, mate, my last question for you is, I would like you to please describe the opening laps of a TCR race, because if someone tells me the one bit you must watch at a TCR round, it's the start to the end of lap one or two, because they are the most intense couple of minutes of touring car racing you will ever see. There's so much going on as you guys hang on to these cars. They're side by side, clearly no rear tire grip. What's it like? Because it's pretty wild to watch.
Yeah, it is. I mean, for anyone who's raced in the past or done go-karts or whatever, the closest thing I'd attest to it is kind of rolling out the gate at Lithgow on a 1 or 2 degree morning and trying to get around the first corner. It's kind of just like the nose will turn. You've got no problem with that, but you just have no idea what the back's going to do until the first time you add steering lock. So I remember going into lead at turn one in Sydney over the weekend, and looking at the first turn, I was kind of narrow, just being defensive and thinking, oh, I've got to hold this flat. I've turned it in. It's just snapped on me straight away. I thought, okay, well, it's not flat. And it's just chaos. It really is, because sometimes your car's hooked up and, you know, you're on a charge, and then two guys in front of you are, you know, battling to blink and breathe. So it's really odd, because the tire strategy as well, you never know who's on good tires, who's on bad tires. So it is basically just it. It's funny, I tell the team, don't talk to me on the first two laps, let the dust settle, because it's just absolutely wild and totally open for interpretation. And you can really make or break a race and Josh, a week all in two corners.
It's wild. It's
all it is. Sorry, mate, we just lost you there for a second, but I think we've got you back now, mate. Thank you so much for your time. Really do appreciate it. Getting a win in any category is special. Converting a pole into a win is even more so, and you did that on the weekend. Well done, and good luck for the remainder of the TCR season.
Thank you very much, guys. Thanks for having me, and yes, I'll do my best.
All right, joining us to cover off what was a massive weekend, probably the biggest weekend in motor racing, I think, the weekend we just had. Mark Walker, g'day to you.
Hello, Tony Shebeki. I saw an awful lot of Nürburgring, which was good, in between bits. And as we record this on Tuesday night, the NASCAR race just finished. So,
5 minutes ago.
5 minutes ago.
That was insane.
We will talk about that, I'm sure, a little bit later on. But boy, oh boy. Hey, let's kick it off with locally. And that was a big weekend. Some fantastic racing at Sydney Motorsport Park.
Yeah, it was. You know, we were piecing the power rankings together on the race talk, and it's pretty hard to find some knots out of that because it was very, very good.
How do you rank the hots, though? Because every category legitimately had very good racing. Like, they did. The whole thing was entertaining.
And even the stuff that wasn't aired on Stan Sport was very good. The Radicals, the two 40-minute races, they had 50 minutes, and they can often be a little bit tedious, but they were both really good car races as well. Prototypes were the same. So it was a tremendous weekend. I'm not quite sure where to start from a recap point of view, but I think just following on from having Josh Buchan on the show, and doesn't that young bloke speak really, really well, but can't he half drive? He's an exciting talent. I love the fact that he's made TCR his home. That's where he wants to be. He's happy to be there. But it is a cracking championship. It feels like TCR's finally come of age. It's a year where it's now properly legitimate part of the national motor racing scene. It's gone from being a curio, something new, something fresh, something a little bit different that people went, oh, yeah, this is okay, to being a properly competitive, really hard to win national motor racing championship. And you look at the championship order. I mean, Tony D'Alberto, 412 points. Down to 10th place, Ben Barguana on 329. So it's 85 points covering the top 10 drivers in the championship.
Crazy.
It is just outrageously competitive. And to string together one good weekend is very difficult, as Josh found out. So I rate it. It's such a cool championship this year. And as we finished on with Josh, Mark, we asked him about the opening laps. And he said it's like driving on ice. And it really is, but they are the most frenetic opening laps in Australian motorsport at the moment.
Well, back in the old Super Touring days, they used to give them two warm-up laps, didn't they? Just to try and avert a bit of that silliness at the start. But like you say, it's a destination category now, isn't it? It's forging its own path there. It's not all bankrolled by the category owners anymore. It's teams out there legitimately wanting to be involved with it. And yeah, the product was pretty spicy on the weekend, but it's the big names that, you know, you've got your Fabian Coulthard, James Moffat's of the world, Michael Caruso, who are your sort of star power that are able to draw people in. But they had shockers, like for various reasons, not necessarily of their own doing.
Will Brown.
Yep. Oh, he was sort of up and down. When he was going, he was going well. But it's a spot where a Jordan Cox or a Josh Buchan can make a name for themselves.
Certainly is. We should clarify too that we're talking about ice racing as similar as in Finland, not actually being on methamphetamines because that's totally illegal and we wouldn't promote that at all.
Ice racing would be a thing in Melbourne tonight. Actually, there should be. It's about 3 degrees here.
It could be, Mark. You might be right. Well, I think you're spot on, Crosby. I think the closest of the championship, show me a championship anywhere in the world where you've got 85 points separating 10 blokes and you've got a good championship.
It is. And it's the fact that the next race meeting, the balance of performance might swing completely the other way and some other mark is going to go up there and be able to dominate.
Well, we spoke about that, didn't we, with Josh and the fact of how hard it was to get that momentum going in the series.
Yeah, and even on the weekend, like the Hyundais were very strong. The Peugeots weren't as dominant as they have been, for instance, at Mount Panorama. Those things were rocket ships up there. So, yeah, the BOP definitely plays a role. But just to further on that point about having the established stars in there and having others come in and knock them off, I love that. I love that for Josh Buchan. Jordan Cox, I mean, he's a hero to many. And the Jordan Cox Supporters Club were out there on the weekend.
How much beer did they get into it?
They drank a lot of beer. They drank a lot of beer, most of it up in the ARDC garage by pit exit. But then they migrated, I don't know, TV showed it a couple of times. They migrated to the exit of turn two. And it was like a Valentino Rossi grandstand at a MotoGP race, all the yellow, except it was all Coxie white.
Was it the same mob that came to Phillip Island?
Yep. Wow. Same group of people, just larger because it's his home turf.
Yeah.
Dead set. But that is the best possible thing for that series, is to have guys like Jordan come in and establish a fan base. And, yeah, he brings a turnkey fan base because he's a freak of motor racing. But I love that. I think that's part of the appeal. Mm. I love the fact that Tony D'Alberto hasn't won a bloody race yet. He'll hate it. But yeah. The fact he's leading the championship and has gone winless, I think that's cool because it shows that the experienced drivers can use that consistency. You know, the Honda's not the fastest car, I don't think, in TCR, but it's there or thereabouts. And Tony is using it very well. And four rounds in, leads the championship and is doing a really nice job of it.
Sort of to round out the guests from tonight, I think an absolute highlight for mine were those Porsche Sprint Challenge races. They were crackers, yeah. Especially that finisher race too. I mean, when you've got a drag race to the line and there's a lap car, there's a pick in the middle of the road and the leaders go either side of him, it doesn't really get a whole lot better than that. And that follows on from that pass in for the lead in race number one.
Yeah, the Sergeant Wood has got a really good vibe about it for an amazing title fight this year between those two. Ryan Wood, not very well known here, is incredibly highly rated. Doesn't come from a lot of money in New Zealand. I met his dad who was over there, hadn't seen his boy for 4 months, said, no, we let him come over and go testing and do his thing. We didn't want to bother him, just wanted him to focus on it. But he's a cool kid. He's got a bit of an attitude, which I love, bit of a personality. I hadn't had an opportunity to meet him until quite late in the weekend, just with the nature of how busy we were. But he came up and introduced himself and I wanted to come and say good day and tell you what I'm doing. And it's like, yeah, cool, mate, really good. But he is a superstar. And a lot of the Kiwis in the Porsche paddock all go, yeah, watch out for him. There's a reason Earl Bamber's grabbed him and put him in that car. So he's really exciting. Tom Sargent's one of the most exciting young talents in this part of in Australia. So it shapes up. And then that finish was wild. That was such a cool thing to see. And I feel for Tom because had there been a car width of bitumen on the other side of the garage, yeah, one car of Nathan Murray, then it would have been a drag race, dead set. And they would have crossed the line about three wide with lap cars in the middle. But I love the fact it took to the grass. I love the fact he initially kept the boot into it. And he lost a race, but I think Tom probably won some fans out of that effort to try and hold on to it. And then got a win on Sunday, which was a really good return of serve for a pretty challenging Saturday when he got beaten twice. So shapes up well. Courtney Prince was awesome. Yeah. She drove really well. Boy, I reckon she's making the best starts out of any Porsche category, and that includes Carrera Cup. She can launch those things. Really, really impressive.
Forever the challenge in motorsport in this country is to find a competitive female driver. Mm. And did we find one there in the weekend? Because that was pretty sporty.
Mm. Yeah. Well, people forget that we had two rounds of Sprint Challenge last year before it all turned to doo-doos in March, April, whenever it was. And she was third in the championship then as well. Mm. And fourth. And the three drivers in front of her are all now in Carrera Cup and all running at the front of the field. So, yeah, I think she's very, very capable. I know Mick and Maria Ritter have got wraps on her driving ability. And the way she went about it. Most impressive for mine was how she improved over the course of the weekend. So race one, she finished quite a way back. She was third, but I think 10 seconds down the road. But by race three, she was matching the lap times of Ryan Wood and Tom Sargent. So really impressive. But that series, boys, is dead set mini Carrera Cup this year. It is both in Pro-Am and in Pro. It is so intensely competitive, Sprint Challenge. It's very cool.
I watched those S5000s under lights and I thought I was watching the Singapore Grand Prix.
They were good. Small field, yes, and that's disappointing and frustrating and, you know, that's the eternal story of Wings and Slicks racing in Australia. But it was pretty good. And that battle between Joey Mawson and Aaron Cameron on Saturday night was pretty spectacular. Two really good young drivers that I think we all agree are bound for pretty good things in our sport, having a crack and driving those things as hard as they could be driven. And that's all you can ask for.
But then it was the battle for third as well. Was it Macro and Hearn as well, which was equally as intense on Saturday night. But then the carry on Sunday, that final race with the whiteout. Unbelievable.
Yeah, I've never seen anything like that. That was, I want to be diplomatic, but the cleanup, it was a lesser of two evils, I think, in terms of it would almost be better of having the oil still down on the racetrack than having an inch and a half thick of sandblast material, because that's what it looked like. It was like the cars came back from a war zone afterwards. All the wraps been sandblasted off and, Yeah, that was insane, and just enormous credit for those drivers to keep them all pointing in the right direction on that, because it looked awful, but ended up being a hell of a race.
And it sort of splices into a hot that I've nominated for the weekend was the TV product, and having some of those external cameras, like on the S5000s, the one on Mawson's car.
Mm. Looking back.
Yeah, especially cool. That night race, the flames getting out of it. Mm. Oh, that was rad. But there was a few new camera angles on the different cars, and there was the one under the front suspension there of the car as well, on Nathan Hearn's Trans Am car looking back. You know, that's good quality stuff from, you know, essentially, in inverted commas, a second tier broadcast. But you had the drones, you had all the gun commentators. Like, obviously, you guys who are pros are pro, but Michael Caruso, I thought he was excellent on the weekend. He was just being Michael Caruso. He wasn't pretending to be a commentator. He was just being himself, and that's what people love, and he was awesome at it.
Yeah, he's good value. He's very good value. And full chops to Robbo and to Moff, but Robbo as well was actually angry with us for not crossing to him during the race on Saturday night. It was like, why didn't he come to me? I was having a great time. And
the Moff cross was excellent. His lines were just bang on. It's the job he was meant to do.
Yeah, 100%. But and full credit to those drivers and the teams for allowing that to happen. And it doesn't happen in supercars anymore. Certainly doesn't happen anywhere else in the world. You know, in the States, they'll talk to them under caution. You got a copy. But it's pretty rare that you talk to drivers under racing conditions. Mm. And full credit to those guys for allowing that to happen. And that will be a regular part of the broadcast moving forward. That is the intention, that will become a staple, especially of TCR, but I'd suggest you find it in other categories as well, which will be cool. I want to talk to someone in the middle of a TCM race and critique their oversteer moments at every corner. I think that'd be hilarious. McConville would be perfect for that. Yeah, I am.
Completely like
that. Safe in the commentary box.
And we'll cross you right in the middle of the corner now.
Yeah.
Give us a quick wrap on TCM and also
Trans Am. Big weekend from a championship context, and they're running out of rounds, so they've only got two to go. Big swing Nathan Hearn at DNF, that cost him massively. Owen Kelly was there to capitalise, so he's looking good. That's great racing, isn't it? It's such a cool category. And Touring Car Masters, I thought they were really good. Probably missed Stevie J, I think, which was a shame, and Marcus Sukanovic, who's out injured, but the racing was still really good. John Bow on the weekend, but there was not a dry eye in the house for Cameron Tilley, who won that final race, legitimately on pace, on performance, in the Valiant Pacer. And even JB said, when I got to second place, I couldn't catch him. He was too fast. And that car is the most popular car in Touring Car Masters, which by virtue makes it one of the most popular cars on the support program, the undercard from supercars. Yeah. And Cam's been trying to win one of those things for a very, very, very long time. And I just could not be more pleased for someone to win a race. So it was a great story.
Two-parter there. Bowie's win with another last lap pass. That was cool on Saturday.
Yep.
But how many clicks did the Cam Tilley win get you?
Oh, lots. Thousands. It was by far and away, much to the chagrin of my ARG PR colleague, Grant Rowley, it was by far and away the most engaged post of the weekend, and it made exactly zero effort to post. But a cool story nonetheless. Love it.
No doubt. Speaking of cool stories, well, I think Monaco sort of had a cool finish. I'm not sure about the chapters up until that final page, though. There was some weird stuff happening up there.
Yeah, it was frustrating. Another frustrating exercise in race management by the FIA, in my opinion. And I tweeted it, and I stand by it, that there's a disconnect between the promoter, which is Liberty Media, it's now Formula One, and the people that go about managing the motorsport side, which is the FIA. And I think it couldn't be more exemplified by what happened a few hours later at Indianapolis, because in IndyCar, the church and state aren't separated. They're the same thing. The people promoting the series, trying to sell the tickets, trying to sell the sponsors, trying to put on the show, are the same ones running the race. And it could be the same can be said for NASCAR. Whereas as much as they work together and as much as they were unified in developing the new car and introducing all the new regulations, the FIA and Formula One itself are still separate bodies, and the FIA control everything that happens on track. And I think if you were Ross Brawn or Stefano Domenicali, who runs Formula One, the business side of the sport, you'd be sitting there for that first hour of absolute waftam going, ah, pulling your hair out, because it was very frustrating and there was poor information. It was poorly communicated. And if you were sitting there on TV going, what on earth is going on? And it's almost made it worse, boys, that later it's come out that there were some power failures in race control, and that was part of the reason they had a delay. But that would be the first thing I'd push out. Not, oh, we're sitting on our hands because there's a light rain shower coming through.
Yeah.
Because that makes it look silly, which it did at the time, and it was another Spa circumstance from last year. So there's a bit to work on there, I think. But, you know, when they got racing, it was a half-decent motor race and a pretty intense finish of Ferrari shooting themselves in the foot again and Red Bull being there to capitalise.
Yep.
Yep, agreed, 100%. IndyCar, Indy 500, their massive race of the year, and this one had a fair few things to it as well.
Yeah, not a good day for the Antipodeans, was it?
No.
How are you, Scott? If you're Scott Dixon, you're destined to win that thing. He's led more laps in that race than anyone in the history of the event now.
He should have won it four times, not once. Yeah.
He sat on the pole five times, had that race shot to bits, speeding the pits by 1 mile an hour, cost himself the win, and $2.4 million US was the gap between what he wound up with and That's what crazy. The winner wound up getting.
Yep.
How would you be? No wonder he's slightly upset with himself.
Yeah, 100%. And
that was another story on his house.
Yeah, correct. Correct. Another wing on the estate. Yeah.
But I think you're spot on, though, Mark. I think the fact that he has accepted it and blamed himself for the situation is probably not a bad thing compared to what may happen in Formula One and others, where there'll be so much of the blame game happening about that.
Oh, and Scott's pretty decent when it comes to knowing when he's cocked up. That's what it was. The only person that control your entry into pit lane is the driver behind the wheel. So, you know, he's owned it. He's been around long enough to do that. But lots of stories to come out of it. Our bloke had a shunt with a couple of laps to go, which was a shame for Scotty. So that was unfortunate. Will Power, Penske cars were a bit anonymous. Mm. In fact, Scott was the fastest of all the Penske cars up to that point, the leading Penske car. So that was frustrating for them. But cool finish. They made the right call to fly the red flag with that late crash, and it set up a really good battle with Marcus Ericsson and Pato O'Ward having a really good scrap into turn one with a lap to go. The right bloke won out of that. I think Ericsson was so strong in that last stint when he got that track position, so deserved to win it. Huge result for Sweden, and the first Swedish driver to win since Kenny Brack. Loved it. Fantastic. Great result.
Two things. The pay driver won. There's been a bit of chat about that afterwards. He's a legit pay driver. Clearly super talented. You don't do nearly 100 Grand Prix and, you know, not have talent. But that's the funny little side story there within that Chip Ganassi squad. But then the Pato O'Ward, like, what a cool cat. Did you see his TikTok that went viral?
Yes.
From the Would You Rathers that he did before the race. That was so cool. But
yeah,
and that sort of thing that's been really endearing a lot of people to the whole IndyCar cause lately is that, okay, it's cool racing and all that, but the driver's actually cool. It's almost like they need a Drive to Survive sort of thing to let more people know about it.
Mm. Yep. Every year we have the Indy 500, we have the Charlotte race straight after it in NASCAR. And as you said, Mark, this one took a hell of a long time to finish.
5 hours and 16 minutes. So
that's crazy.
Pretty long. 619 miles, the longest NASCAR race in history. The problem was it was a decent race for world 600 standards. It was actually a good race, and the new car put on some interesting stuff. There was a fair bit of carnage and carry on throughout, and it all came to a point with a really cool finish where you had Chase Briscoe all over Larson in the closing laps, and Briscoe fenced himself, so there's a green-white checker, and then Denny Hamlin came through for the win to essentially take you know, all the crown jewels are now in his collection, three Daytona 500s, a Darlington Southern 500, and now a Charlotte 600. So old Denny keeps racking up trophies, but good race, but bloody long. So it's that too long. And that's the whole point of it. It was the wheelers back in the day were like, well, we Indianapolis has a 500. We've got to do something bigger than a 500. That's a 600.
Yeah. Just call it a Cup Series 6 hour and be done with it. Seriously. Yeah.
It's shorter than Bathurst.
It's 100% made sure that, it's 100% made sure that no one jumps in a plane after the Indy 500 and goes down to Charlotte to race like they used to.
They do it. Like there was talk about who would possibly do it. And
well,
I think
Kurt Busch did it a couple of years ago.
Yeah. Mm. And the organizing bodies would work together if somebody was going to do it. They would definitely work together on their timings and whatnot.
100%. Yeah. And look, Penske's put the prize money up for the 500 as well. So record prize pool this year and more than $3 million to the winner. So I think, that will entice more of those NASCAR guys to come over. In fact, I think it was Denny Hamlin who tweeted who's responsible for it. And I think Jenna Fryer from AAP said Penske, and he was like, no, it's good. You know, big money will attract the big drivers. So they still race for cash over there. So yeah, why not? It's pretty cool.
Speaking of big drivers and big names, did I read that Kimi Raikkonen's joining NASCAR?
He is.
He's going back to NASCAR. He's graduating from the truck series.
He graduated back to Formula One.
He's joining one of the top teams. He'll be at Watkins Glen with Trackhouse, who won a couple of races this year, including on the road course at COTA. So decent team. And it'll be a challenge for Kimi going to a stock car like that on a road course, something completely different. Don't expect the world from him. You know, you look at what Jacques has managed to do over the years when he's had his ring of runs. Don't expect too much. But it's cool that team, it's part owned by Pitbull, the rapper. So they're all about the marketing and that side of things. So if they have the opportunity to put some superstars in there, they're going to do that in future.
Do you know what I would love? I would love dearly for Kimi to win that race and not give a shit.
I thought you were going to say I'd love Kimi to put out a rap song.
No, well, that too. Jeez. But can you, like, you know, the NASCAR drivers, they have the amazing celebrations and all that. And Kimi Raikkonen winning a NASCAR race would just be the most, I'd love to see the Yanks get their head around that and how to deal with it. Cause I think it'd be hilarious.
The post-race goes,
yes,
my favorite Watkins Glen one was when Ambrose won the race in 2011, did a big skid, and ESPN used to have the Battle of the Burnouts every week on their midweek NASCAR. It was a daily NASCAR show back in the day, whichever one it was. And they had the Battle of the Burnouts, and we rigged it so hard. We had everyone in Australia voting for it. It won five weeks in a row until they just had to end the segment because Ambrose just kept smoking everyone. It was so good.
That's great.
Yeah, memories.
Nürburgring.
Yeah, it turns out a bit of fog and sleet in the early hours of the Bathurst 12-hour. Good preparation for winning and the Nordschleife because our boy Kelvin Vanderlinde got up.
How about brotherly love or hate? That was insane.
And the fact that Lawrence came out afterwards on Instagram and said, I didn't back out because it was my brother.
My brain exploded, and I regret that immensely.
In the early hours of the Nürburgring 24-hour, that was extraordinary. I've met both of those two dudes, Lawrence and Dries. Dries won the 12-hour in 2018. Lawrence won pole in 15 and on the podium twice. Amazing race car drivers. Both pretty intense cats, though, so it doesn't surprise me at all. Porsche had an absolute shocker. They stacked the field there. But they had absolutely no luck at all, including our boys Matt Campbell and Jackson Evans. Apparently the Falcon tyres were not good because it's open tyre at that race. And the Falcons were 5 or 6 seconds a lap slower than the Michelins and the Pirellis in the field, which sounds like a lot. But it's a long lap, but even on a long lap, it's still a decent margin. So, yeah, but Audi get the win. Amazing for that brand, and they're having a pretty decent season. Probably makes up a bit for shooting themselves in the foot at Mount Panorama and in the way that they did. So huge win for the R8s, and Vanderlinde did a lot of the anchoring of that driving at the end there and won his second 24-hour, which was really cool to see.
We had really good coverage in Australia, actually, with our friends Radio Show Limited commentary and all the pictures beamed in there to BN Sports. So huge weekend on the box. My goodness, there was so much to watch.
And I'm tipping that the people at Porsche weren't calling them Falcon Tires. There may have been another similar name that they might have
True. Just to repeat, I was saying the brand Falcon tyres.
Yeah, no, thank you.
Yeah,
appreciate that. Boys, just before we go, a final one I'm going to throw at you just for a comment. Of course, this week here in Australia, we saw three generations driving out on Queensland Raceway on Monday. Dick Johnson, Steve Johnson, and Jet Johnson, grandfather, father, and son out there. An amazing thing. It was lovely to watch and all that stuff. Is Jet Johnson a shoo-in for supercars, do we believe, or is it something he's going to have to work really hard to get?
Oh, that's a tough one.
He'll have to work at it. He'll have to prove himself. He's there's no point just putting a kid in there because he's got a surname. But correct. I think he's moving in the right direction. Like, he's definitely improving. He's still very young. But he'll have to go start winning some Trans Am races. I mean, he is at the lower spec series, but TR2, win some national ones, getting up into Super 2 and Super 3 and go from there. He'll have to still learn the ropes, but I'm impressed with how far he's come, especially, you know, where he started there in Hyundai Excels not very long ago.
Yeah, true.
What he said.
Yeah, no, and he definitely drives at DJR, doesn't he? He doesn't drive anywhere else.
No, you never know.
Well, maybe he does. I just probably want to Stevie J's the blips in his career, and that he could have gone and driven elsewhere, and it might have been absolutely better, what he needed. Yeah, yeah. But it was very cool to see, though.
And oh, it was great.
Well done to DJR and Ryan Story for organising that. I noticed the doctor had a bit of a skid himself, which was great.
Do you think there was an ulterior motive to that whole setup? Oh, it's like, we're going to do this rad thing, but by the way.
P.S., I'm going to have a steer. Well, I mean, he owns the team, so he's probably allowed, but it was very nicely done. And I can only imagine that how Jilly was feeling while that was happening as well. And
yes,
not the least Stevie's wife, but yeah, very cool moment and amazing to get three generations of probably the most famous racing surname in the sport at the moment out and about, which was very nicely done.
Yeah, and also great to hear that the doc is feeling a lot better than what he has been for the past few months.
So good to see him well enough to drive a supercar, which is excellent. Boys, that's time it. He came back on the show, actually, and also offered up his brilliant contributions to the power rankings, which were good.
Exactly. Where are they gone?
I know. We've missed them. They were just automatic hot. Thanks, of course, to Doric for their support of the rankings and the show.
Yep, correct. Catch you next week. Well done.
Do you know what happens next week?
What?
Nothing.
Oh.
We've come out of the most ridiculous, intense, busy period of the sport and huge, you know, we went Perth and there was a week off. Then it was 12-hour Winton Speed Series plus all the other stuff going on. Next weekend, diddly squat.
Can no MotoGP, no Superbikes, no nothing?
Well, there probably is, but locally, there's no Formula One. They get a week off.
What are we going to get you to commentate?
I'm going to go and commentate my fake grass growing in my backyard or something like that. Sweet. I think I'm going to have to. I don't want to stop the form.
we might have to come up with something for next week's show. Then maybe our first top five for the year.
I'd be up for a top five. We haven't done a top five in a long time. If you've got a top five,
top five something. Richard's commentary calls of 2022.
No.
Be hard to pick.
It would be. It'd be a hard thing to rank.
I was just trying to think of which ones I'd nominate. No, we're not going to do that. That's very, very silly.
And what if one doesn't just go straight to the top?
No one cares about what I waffle on about. But if you've got a top five scenario, so five favorite, top five, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, something suggested, hit us up on our socials at The Race Talk, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Let us know what you would like us to offer our opinions on, and we'll get Dale in and we might get hashtag Doric Guy in and we'll throw some options out there. I just also very quickly like to acknowledge my good mate Jack Perkins, and head to the Perkins Engineering website and buy one of their truckers caps because they're brilliant.
Ooh, okay. Are you wearing one right now, Richard?
I am wearing one right now.
Yeah, he is.
Righto, mate.
This is not paid product promotion, but I'd like just to give Jacko a pat on the back, and they're doing nice things. And check out the Perkins Engineering YouTube channel while you're at it.
Okay, boys. Catch you next week.
Bye for now.
See ya. And thank you for joining us right here on The Grid.
This program is a Radio Show Limited production.
Tell your friends there's more at RadioLeMans.com.